So from time to time, I will be sitting in our living room, and I'll hear in Danielle's shop and in the office a conversation going on, but I might be reading or whatever and not really paying attention until I hear some words that kind of grab my ears. One of which sometimes sounds like this: "I don't know, go ask your dad." Now, these are the times when Psalm 139 rings in my ears. Where can I go from their presence? Anyway, I want to get away. Don't tell Danielle. Sometimes I'm like, I want to get out here. She's right there, by the way, if you're wondering. You know, there are times when I know that I'm about to be pursued about something, and I kind of want to get away. But, you know, go ask your dad is not a completely unreasonable imperative. There are times when my children need to come and ask me things, to pursue me about something. And you know, that imperative, go ask your dad, go pursue your dad, that's actually the imperative of this passage. I like speaking of imperatives. I like it when, you know, as an interpreter, a biblical interpreter, I like it when I look at a text and what we're supposed to do is clear grammatically, because it actually shows up in imperative form, which just makes me, in a very nerdy way, very happy. This text tells us what we're supposed to do. Speaking to his disciples, Jesus says, ask, seek, knock. All imperatives. It's great. If you don't like grammar, I'm sorry. You're missing out on a world of fun. But it's right there. And the thing I want us to see, though, is they're not generalized or detached imperatives. They're imperatives that sit within this particular context. It's this family talk that's going on between Jesus and his disciples. In this case, the context, this family talk is happening, and we see family language at the very beginning of the Sermon on the Mount where we started. We see it in the Beatitudes. We see kind of sonship language. But it especially is front and center starting about chapter 5, verse 43, where we see lots of our Father in heaven, or kind of sonship language. That really is in the mix in a very obvious way from there all the way through the end of our passage this morning. But not only do we have the context of kind of a family talk, we also have there's a rhetorical device that Jesus is using here called the divine passive. You might have heard of this before. It's a way that a Jewish writer or speaker would refer to something that God is doing without actually saying explicitly God's doing it. So they take a passive form of the verb to mean, what's a passive form of the verb? The one who receives essentially means will receive from God. And the one who seeks will find God. The one who knocks, it will be opened by God. God's going to reveal himself using this passive form of the verb. Again, we're going to stop with the nerdiness in just a second, but just let me have this moment, okay? Anyway, so there's this divine passive that's going on here that's saying, essentially, I want you to seek, to ask, to seek, and to knock. And these things are going to be given, are from God himself. If we were to summarize all those imperatives together, we could say, essentially, Jesus is telling us, pursue your Father. Ask your Father. Seek your Father. Knock on your Father's door, as it were, for audience. So the imperative then is to pursue the Father. Now, that might raise a bit of a problem within us, for some of us particularly, because it may be that the thought of pursuing God makes you somewhat fearful. It might make you fearful when you think about yourself. Am I the kind of person that if I pursue God, he'll actually pay attention to? You might look at your own weakness, your sin, something like that. So it might be about fear about yourself if you pursue God, but it might also be fear about God. Is he going to trick me? Some of you have had people in authority, maybe even particularly your father, who, when you've gone to him, he hasn't been especially nice about it. Does it make sense to go to God? You might be thinking, is he even there ontologically? Like, does he exist? Maybe fearful about that. Or you might think, is he there relationally? Like, if I go to him, is he going to actually engage with me? Is he actually paying attention? Is he actually interested? These are significant questions for us. If we say the imperative is pursue the Father, those are significant fears that we might have. Is it actually sensible for us to heed Jesus' instruction to pursue God our Father? Does that make any sense at all? I would say that the answer is yes. And I want us to look at two reasons, and I might sneak in kind of a sneaky third reason at the end, but just so you know. Two reasons from this text that I think it makes sense for us to heed Jesus' instruction and to pursue the Father. Let's look at both of those in turn. The first reason I think this text shows us for why we should, in fact, pursue our Father is in verse 8. Verse 8, it says, "For everyone who asks receives, and the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks it will be opened." Here we have that divine passive idea. The verse is saying that the one who asks receives from the Father. The one who seeks finds the Father. The one who knocks, the door will be opened to him. He'll gain audience to the Father. That's what Jesus is saying here. The first reason this text shows us for why we should pursue our Father is this. He actually responds. When we pursue him, he actually responds to him. He gives, he makes himself known, he offers an audience. I mean, think about what that could look like. It could look like any number of things. So we might think about the common grace of God to the whole world. He's created a world where if you plant stuff, it tends to grow if you handle it right. If you work, there tends to be sustenance that comes from that. That happens in a general way. There are things about the world that can be discovered and worked with. There's all of that. Father speaks through the Scriptures, his Word. We pursue his Word. He says stuff in there. We can hear his voice. Sometimes we see God responding through unexpected supply of things, whether that's things that are truly miraculous. I mean, I think of times when we were in seminary when checks would show up and we'd go, "Oh, that's a surprise." Sometimes it comes from God's people. He's speaking to us, showing his response to us by his own children, offering each other the things that they need. We see all that. We see the Father giving, making himself known, offering audience. Those are ways that he responds to us. And I guess, you know, we can throw in the question here, are you asking, seeking, or knocking? But with all of that said, and with all of that that I totally agree with, I agree with all the things I just said, just that I tell you. But I also know that sometimes we have a nagging problem with this idea that God always responds. And that nagging problem is sometimes silence. Jesus says, ask, seek, and knock. Jesus says, pursue the Father. Why is it when I pursue the Father, I get silence? That's a tough question, isn't it? Because sometimes we feel like we are asking, we are seeking, we are knocking, but it doesn't appear to be getting us anywhere. It doesn't seem to be getting us any receiving or finding or audience. What about all of that? Well, I was going to have Eva come help me with this, but she's helping down the hall. But I have this thing that I do sometimes to my girls. I'm realizing as I tell stories, I have a lot of these little things that I do with the girls, little, I guess they're like little family liturgies. But there's one thing that I love to do with them. Sometimes I'll say, hey, come here, I need to tell you something. And they'll come over, and this is great. So they'll get up to me, "Dad, what is it?" And I'll just like lean in and give them a hug and kiss them on the forehead. And that's it. And at first, it was kind of fun, like, what? What are you saying? And of course, being the guy that I am, like, you know, I'm not going to tell you. But finally, Lily one day says, "You know, I get what you're saying to me, Dad." She's, "I know you're saying I love you." And then Eva, who's of course more erudite, will sometimes, you know, "Hey, come here, I want to tell you something." You know, give her a hug and a kiss. "I love you too, Dad." Like she gets the message out of my silence. You see, silence is a hard thing to wrestle with when we're asking, we're seeking, we're knocking. When the answer is silence, it's easy for us to think silence communicates nothing. But the reality is that silence doesn't always communicate nothing. Sometimes silence communicates a lot. I mean, silence can, I mean, think about kind of the father-kid relationship. Sometimes as a dad, my silence communicates they need to deal with something I've already said. You know, when they're saying something, I'm just kind of thinking, sometimes silence means you need to handle that thing first before we get any further. Silence can communicate more than just nothing. But you know what? Sometimes, you know what silence communicates? Sometimes silence communicates that I want them just to be still and rest in my embrace. Silence doesn't always communicate nothing. And I know that that's not just like an exhaustive answer to the problem of why do I not hear God speaking? I'm not offering that as some kind of a trite, plug this into your thinking and everything will be better. I don't mean it that way. But what I do mean to say is this, as heartwarming as my illustration is, sometimes silence communicates a lot. I mean, I think about me, there's no doubt in my mind that I am absolutely not the greatest dad in the world. I have a long list of illustrations of what an idiot I can be as a dad. My kids are saddled with a lot for me. Sometimes I don't respond to them the way that I should. Sometimes I'm distracted and I don't respond at all. Those are all problems. But you know what? Our Father in heaven always responds. Sometimes the response is not what we want. Sometimes the response is silence. But he always responds. And the response of silence is not nothing. I think in some ways we need to learn how to hear silence for what it says. And that's very difficult. But yet, we're to pursue our Father, to ask, to seek, to knock, because our Father responds. Well, if you accept that idea that our Father does respond to us, you might have some questions about the manner in which he responds sometimes, even beyond silence. The second reason I think this text shows us for why we should actually do what Jesus says, pursue the Father, it's in verses 9 through 11. Verse 9 starts with a word that signals not a contrast, but another reason, yet another reason why we should pursue the Father. The picture Jesus paints is of a father who hears the request of a child and then he actually gives a child what he really needs. The word picture had me thinking about a Hertz donut. Anybody ever had a Hertz donut? Daniel knows about a Hertz donut. I had this friend of mine in high school that he had this thing that he did. It's like a little game. It was something that his dad did too. You know, dads, it's kind of strange to me. I'm going to evidence this in a minute. Dads, something happens in fatherhood where an otherwise reasonable person acts like a real weirdo. But this guy's dad had this thing that he did, or my friend, he'd say, hey, you want a Hertz donut? And of course, the kid's like, ooh, a donut, yeah. And then his dad would like playfully pinch him and go, Hertz donut, right? See it? Okay. You might have seen this in other ways, like a dad that gives, yeah, I know a dad that would do this. You know, hey, you want a sandwich? How about a knuckle sandwich? You know, again, dads are weird. Dads are weird, because I'll admit to you, there have been times when I've taken a trusting child and offered to give them a kiss and turn it into a Zerbert. You guys know what a Zerbert is? No, you don't know a Zerbert? Max, come here. No, I'm just kidding. That's when you like go to give a kiss and you go, that's a Zerbert. Dads are weird, right? Says a weird dad. But here's the thing. Those are playful, silly examples. But I also suspect that there are some of you who have a sense that if there is a God who's even there, and if he's interested in responding at all, he's clearly out to get me. It's clear. Jesus' point here is that, you know, the thing is that no father worth his weight would hear the request from a child for something that they need. And we're talking here about actual needs. Like, this is not Jesus. You know, we're not talking about privileged gluttony or anything like that, but no father worth their weight would hear the request of a child for something they truly need and go, ha, 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 getcha. A good dad doesn't do that. And what Jesus is saying here is that, listen, only the most terrible exceptions of a father would hear the request of a child and try to hurt them. Dad, give me a fish. Here, have a steak. No father, no good father. And you know what? Even, I mean, Jesus is saying, listen, in the broad scope of the world, you fathers, you earthly fathers, you evil fathers, you know that that's not how you treat your kids. Most dads know that. There are bad examples, yes, but most dads know that. And Jesus is saying, if you know that, if you fathers hear the request of your kids and you don't go, oh, I'm going to get them, don't you think that your Father in heaven, when he hears you asking for the things that you need, don't you think that he's going to make sure that he gives you the right thing that doesn't ultimately hurt you? Now, to sum up, what I'm getting at here is this, that we can pursue God, we should pursue God, not only because he responds, but also because he's actually good. He actually cares for us. But I know, similar to what we said a minute ago about silence, I understand that while silence presents us with a problem, so does pain. Because some of you might read this and go, but doesn't he sometimes? Doesn't God sometimes give us? Like, I'm asking for bread and I'm eating a rock. Some of you may feel that right now in your own experience. What about those times when we ask, seek, and knock, but we still feel the dissonance of suffering? Well, we can't answer that exhaustively this morning. I'm not going to try to answer it exhaustively. But I do, again, much like I said about silence, I'd like to at least toss this into the mix for you this morning. Sometimes when we ask for things, we don't understand what we're really asking for. Sometimes we think we're asking for bread, but the reality is that we're asking for stone. Sometimes we don't really understand what we're asking for. Sometimes we misidentify what we really desire out of weakness or ignorance or hurt. Sometimes we think, but God, I really need this. And God's answer is, but you don't. It's the very goodness of our Father in heaven that keeps him sometimes from giving us a stone or a serpent, even though a stone or a serpent is exactly what we're asking for, even while we think we're asking for bread and a fish. Sometimes our Father gives us what is good, even if he doesn't always give us what we ask for. And sometimes God's fatherly love actually requires that he give us something that feels painful. Sometimes it's the very love of God which requires that he allow us to endure pain in order for us to grow in the glory he's envisioned us for. And that is easy to say and hard to experience. But you know what? There are some things that are easy to say and hard to experience that are still true. It is easy. You know what? Right now, I'll just tell you, right now, my life is pretty fine. And I know that some of you are in the middle of things that are not fine. And it might be easy for you to sit there and go, easy for you to say. And you know what? You're right. It is easy for me to say. But I think it's still true. It hasn't always been easy to say. My life hasn't always been fine. But you know, sometimes I think about this idea of a good father letting his kids hurt a little bit. Sometimes a kid has to get a little wet in the rain or go to school with the munchies to learn to put their coat on or to get up in time to eat breakfast. There's a principle at play there. And that, I'm not taking lightly the weight of your pain, because I know some of you are enduring things that are far worse than I'm showing up to school wet and with the munchies. So I don't point that out to be flippant or trifling, but just to say that, you know what, sometimes God is working something in you that's deeper than you think it is. It's more beautiful than you can imagine in the moment. And it requires the weight of pain now for the sake of glory later. And again, I know that that's easy to say, but I believe it's still true. Think about what Paul, the Apostle Paul, says in 2 Corinthians. Paul was a man that understood suffering. And you know what Paul said? In 2 Corinthians 4, starting in verse 17, Paul, who was shipwrecked, beat, left for dead multiple times, hunted down by his own people, he said, "For this light momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. As we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen, for the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal." There is a weight, a real weight, to the glory that God is preparing us for. And it may mean that right now we endure suffering. I just want to say to you again, I know some of you are hurting, and I'm not taking your hurt lightly, but But I want to be a voice that speaks into your hurt and says, you know what? This is not an exhaustive answer to the question of suffering. But if there's any way that if you can take the weight of your pain and see that as a pointer, not to the weight of pain, but a marker of what's coming in glory, the weight of your suffering, it's a sign pointing to something bigger and more glorious and more amazing, the thing that you've been built for, that God is working back into you. It's hard to imagine how suffering might work to that end. I'm not going to pretend like I understand how the Lord uses that to work it to our end. But I'm willing to believe what he says. I suppose the question is, do we have sufficient enough reason to believe that that's true in the middle of what doesn't always feel light and doesn't always feel momentary? And I'll tell you, though, that when I look at what Jesus has done for me, the answer is yes. It makes sense to hang on in the questions when I look at what Jesus has done. My faith, my trust in God's goodness, it's not a blind leap in the dark. It's not as though God is saying, hey, just kind of take a step out there and hope for the best. It's not like that. It's rather saying, look at Jesus. Look at what Jesus has done. Look at his demonstrated love and faithfulness. Our trust in God in the midst of suffering is built on something that's actually quite solid. The person of Jesus. When I look at him, I'm willing to hang on and trust that my Father in heaven is good. He must be good even when my vantage point on reality sometimes takes my breath away. Even when the suffering sometimes clouds my ability to look and see things clearly, to know what God might be up to in the thick of it. Because Jesus is a picture not only of the Father's love for us in the midst of suffering, that's true, but he's not only that. You see, Jesus, when we look at Jesus, the work of Christ doesn't end in his death and forgiveness, but there's also this resurrection part that sets us on a trajectory to something that's bigger, a more exhaustive restoration of all things back into the original fullness, and even more than the original fullness, the glory that God built us for. It's even in suffering that God is working back into his people, into his creation, the initial assertion that he made, that this is very good, that's being worked back into us, sometimes even through suffering. The work of Jesus looks forward to that. And that's the case because God is actually, he is good. We can pursue God because he responds. We should pursue God because he responds. And we should pursue God because he's good. One afternoon, so I think it was this past summer, we got home, we unloaded the van, we went inside. I'm sure it was from a trip to Target because I think we only go to Target. And we got all the stuff inside. And Lily realized that she'd forgotten something, so she went back to the van. She got to the van, she opened the door, she climbed inside. I guess out of habit, she closed the door behind her. She got in looking for what she was looking for. She finally saw it kind of behind the very back seat. And in our van, there's like the seat and there's this big kind of storage well. So she climbed back into the storage well, got the thing that she was looking for, and realized the seats are kind of high and couldn't climb back out. And in a lack of safety design, the button on the back doesn't open the back door from the inside. And she couldn't get out. So Lily spent some time asking for me to come and knocking and pleading and makes me sad to think about, crying, all that stuff. Here's my kid inside the van, knocking, asking, seeking, pursuing, and not feeling like she's getting anywhere. What she didn't realize, though, is this. What was going on in the house when she was stuck in the van. What she didn't realize is that it didn't take too long before I was thinking, where's Lily? I made several trips through the house, which doesn't take that long if you've been to our house, you know, downstairs, look around, no Lily. Have you seen Lily? Where's Lily? You seen Lily? And finally, as I walked out of the front yard, I hear this, Daddy! And I'm like, and I realize that Lily's in the van. And I was able to respond to her, get her out. Now, I'm an earthly father who often knows better, but doesn't manage to get it right. I'm an earthly father who doesn't always hear the cries of my kid trapped in a van. I'm an earthly father who's sometimes too tired, too distracted, sometimes oblivious or absent from the situation. But I was pursuing my kid. What I want you to know, and this is that sneaky third reason why we can pursue God. See, the analogy, this is where the analogy breaks down. In all of our asking and seeking and knocking, in all of our pursuing God, I mean, I didn't hear those things until I finally realized, oh my goodness, where's my kid? But I want you to know that the third reason why you can pursue God is because He's pursuing you already. I mean, Lily didn't recognize that for all of her asking or seeking and her knocking from the inside of this van, you know why she was rescued? Because I was already looking for her. And I want to say to you, even in the midst of your suffering or your questions about silence, we can pursue God because He actually responds to us. We can pursue God because He's actually good. But even more fundamentally than those things, it makes sense for you to pursue God. You know why? Because He's already pursuing you. The asking, the seeking, the knocking doesn't fall flat because He's there, He's ready, He's attending, He's loving in ways that as an earthly father I'm going to miss a lot. But not Him. It makes a lot of sense for us to pursue God. So if you're a Christian today, I just encourage you, even in the midst of questions about silence, questions about suffering, don't stop asking, seeking, and knocking. Because He's pursuing you too. And it may be you're here today or listening online in our global audience. It may be that you're here or listening and you wouldn't be able to say today that you would identify Him as your Father. And I appreciate that honesty, actually, but I'd also like to encourage you to maybe reconsider that identification. Because it's true that God is not the Father of everyone in the world in the same way. There are those that don't accept His fatherly love. There are some that won't respond to Him. That's true. And as much as some people really love to debate the mechanics of all of that, I don't really care to do that right now. But the more substantive issue is that if you're feeling the tug of God, then forget about the mechanics of who He does or doesn't ask. He's pursuing you. Why not respond to Him? You might find that this whole Father thing actually does describe your relationship to Him after all, whether you intended for it or not. You might find that He has been pursuing you all along too. And if you're not sure what to do with all that, I'd love to talk to you about it. But Christian, we're going to go to the Lord's table and we're going to celebrate the extent to which God pursued His people, even the gift of His Son and the promise of the resurrection. So what I'm going to do now, I'm going to take a minute, we're going to pray before we head over that way, and I just want to say to you this, it makes sense to pursue God because God responds, because He's good. And even more fundamentally, because He's already pursued you. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, we do come to this kind of a text. And it's not without questions in our hearts, but would You encourage us? Even now as we look to Jesus in the sacrament of the Lord's Supper, may it be a reminder to us of how You do respond. A reminder to us of how good You are. And a reminder to us of how You have sought us out. Use this covenant meal to that end, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.